with the last input and work backwards, because I did write them in number form. And I think primarily what we want to emphasize is we have a responsibility as young entrepreneurs to also be responsible, both socially and in ethical terms. And part of what we hope to achieve as the Youth Economic Alliance is create a new breed of entrepreneurs that understand the role of policy, for instance, understand all these different mechanisms that exist in the country, understand why they should participate in these platforms, but also always have a competitive edge to them, where we are thinking of solutions and needs that are at a global level. It's not to create sharks, Chairperson, but to create dolphins. So if you were to do a comparison of a dolphin and a shark, dolphin is smarter, shark is stronger but ruthless and kills others, whereas a dolphin works for the unity of that collective pool. And that's the type of entrepreneurs. And it's worth that background that whilst it's easy for someone to...
Sorry, just for interruption. I can see Madam Shin is looking at him even closer and say, no, he comes from Kababa. Naim Kababa, you've got both in the sea. So that narration fits his territory where it comes from. It's well said. You can continue, sir.
And it's that ethical basis which would consciously stop an individual from... I can speak for myself. You can't bribe me, because my dreams are not quantified in an economic term. I'm too young. You cannot come to me with any sort of money, because my dreams are bigger than that. And it's that self-belief that, not just for myself, but for many of our members and collective leadership that we have, that we just look at you and you're like, what is dry lagabi? You know, if you're going to say, here's 5 million, I look at you and I'm like, but, and then? You know, because when our role as young people is to dream above the ceiling that this generation has dreamt and taken it to. That's our role, to take it to the next level. It's not your role, it's my role, our role. So we realize that responsibility and we pull up our socks to that, to then say, okay, the next level includes things like WARN and how we can use WARN to improve our health infrastructure, our health knowledge base. Information within the health sector is what is actually one of the biggest reasons why our people make bad decisions. You only eat as good as what you know you must eat. So you eat anything. If someone were to produce a report and say McDonald's is the healthiest food you can eat in the world, you know how many people will go and eat that? It's knowledge. And we can then use technologies like this to then drive knowledge and make sure that all people, not just ICT people, but all aspects of society are enhanced with that knowledge. So that then answers the issue of fronting and the like. I do not expect it from anyone. I can speak again for myself. I have no time for it. You can do your background check. I do pay my SARS easily. You can check. I'm an upstanding citizen of this republic. How will we use WARN to create jobs and economic opportunities? I think ugogo ngiyamcabanga ukuthi ugogo we-DA angithi igama liyangishweba. Mam? Oh, Mam Shin. Oh, yeah. Tombendala. We need to, so how will it create jobs and economic opportunities? That's how I've summarized your question. Like I said, this presents such a great opportunity for us to create jobs that never existed. I often make an example of the milk delivery man. If you look at 30 years, 40 years back, you'd used to have people who actually went door to door and delivered milk. Non-existent anymore. You look at the problems of your post service. The jobs are dying because I get emails. Why must I write, lick an envelope, send it to you? You might lose it half the time. I'm saying, okay, I'll get the letter
because,
to you.
Because you are young and you send text. Say, baby, can I meet you in the restaurant? Now, there is no art. There is no sufficient art that display of what you want to do and your ability to communicate. Now, us who grew up during those days, on Sundays, I think you do listen to Ukhozi between 12:30 and 1 o'clock. If you don't, just open Ukhozi at 12:30 on a Sunday, 1 o'clock, and listen to those people who write and hear Sweet Lamlo Mkhuhla.
Asiyinkondlo.
Incwadi yothando.
Iyinkondlo. Zothando.
Qhubeka mfethu.
My daughter's name is Nkondlokazi. So I do listen. I'm very in tune with African poetry. Uzekahle ekhaya. Baba Mahlangu. Kodwa, to then go back to the how would it create jobs is we have a current situation where the current jobs that we think exist, and I spoke about it in my presentation, where we said the education system is not feeding enough.
I know that there's a whole variety of jobs that are empowered that you use ICTs for. What I specifically wanted to know was, will you be customers of the WOAN? Is that what you're wanting, to be customers of the WOAN, or are you wanting to be part owners of the WOAN?
To answer in a very simple format, it's listed in our inclusion that we want to own. First, you want WOAN to be South African owned. Secondly, we want 40% of it to be owned by youth. Secondly,
I know your presentation. So the WOAN is going to have to present a business case to ICASA to actually pitch for the WOAN. You're going to have some capital behind you. Do you have that capital? Do you have a business plan that you can do? Also, do you see, because there is another WOAN forum here that was here the other day, who has some big hitters involved in that. Do you want to be part of them, or do you want to compete with them? Because it's going to be one WOAN, as far as I understand it. Are you going to compete with these other guys, or you wanted to be included with them?
Maybe to contextualize your question, I'm not representing my own business. We represent black entrepreneurs who are in the space, who are in other sectors that will be affected by this particular space. Within that value chain, both at an ownership and let's call it supplementary services that will arise as a result of WOAN being rolled out. We've made it clear that youth representation at all levels, we're not specific to say Africa and Co. must have a 40%. We're saying there must be youth representation in its totality. And we're not trying to create one billionaire, one multi-millionaire Africa. We would rather have at a respectable income level many and thousands and thousands and thousands of us. That's what we are saying. And that's why our submission was a percentage. Now, we've already, with the other organization, in envisioning how it can work out, then said, okay, go out there, organize yourself, form consortiums. We've been encouraging the people to collaborate, especially young people, to collaborate. Join your skills together, and then you suddenly have a big animal that can compete at a skills level. So if you put the CVs of 20, 30 SMMEs, you can compete with the guys here on experience. On one, you don't need to compete on experience. Who has done one? So who can, which engineer can say, I've done one, here's my CV, that is South African. And if we're saying all one must be South African owned, then from a skills level, we're starting at the same level. Because no one has done one in South Africa.
Let him finish.
Okay.
And let's see how far we go. We should not overshoot our timelines. We still have a gentleman at the back to make his presentation. I don't want people to walk away without listening to him. But let's listen. Look, we are not going to finish. We have not finished anything. Everything that we have dealt with here, it's work in progress. So let him present his issues, whether they are 1,500 or one. I don't think we should really, because he's representing the people that he's speaking to. And I think let's respect that space that he's representing.
I mean, just to wrap up, we've got a very holistic view to the sector and the critical role that this department, to such a point that we actually feel that in probably the top five departments that it's somewhere there, because as the world changes, the methods of making money are being more digital. Hence, you then refer to it as a revolution. It's how you are making money and the key drivers to how you're making money. Now, a technology like WARN is not just for ICT people like PBICT or SMMEs that are putting together devices and putting up towers and the like, and how even the big guys are phrasing it. It's you need to think above and beyond that. What does connectivity mean? What does it mean for the young entrepreneur in terms of their access to resources? What does it mean for a child in a rural primary school that maybe will never go to Johannesburg or Cape Town, but suddenly on their screen they are exposed to everything in this country, in the continent, and in the world? What does it mean for our health infrastructure where my file, I now cannot access or have to recreate a file. The doctors here in Cape Town, if I fall sick, have no idea what my medical history is. It's technologies like WARN that when they are opened up and given to many and smaller players, you are enhancing innovation. You cannot have an environment that is innovative when you have four players. It's impossible. The lack of competition is a well-known reason for a lack of innovation. They have no reason, making the billions that they make, to innovate anything until you force them. Until online, there was a big uproar for MTN ripping off people, and then suddenly they felt that, oh, let's give away some data, let's give away free WhatsApp, this and that. It was only because there was a problem. There is nothing on their own they've done well. Tomorrow you see the CEO of a company that ripped a black person who had an innovation, please call me, ripped him off, still today hasn't paid him. They will come here and talk about innovation, how they're supporting black people. They owe him over $5 billion. The Constitutional Court has said they still have, from today, have not paid him. Maybe if we are here, or maybe the parliamentarians that are here, ask them. Because that was an innovation, well-known, an innovation. And they cut it off. So it's from that perspective that we will create jobs. We're hoping that we will use the technology to create jobs, not just in ICT, but in every single other sector. I think all the other questions are directed to my president here.
Thank you very much, Chairperson and honourable members. Just maybe to cover some of the questions. I'm just going to try and go briefly through them. The guys that have innovated devices, we can show you, we can give you a list. In one of the public engagements with the former minister of DTPS, when the guys presented their cell phones, they even showed him, this is the cell phone that we have. You take that cell phone and you compare it with the Samsung, the latest Samsung or the latest Apple. It beats it outright. Then the question was specifically to Telkom and to Vodacom. They were there at that time. Why aren't you using these devices? And then they give a million and one excuses. Who's going to maintain it? Who's going to do this and that? But the guys are there. And they've innovated. They are South Africans. And they've got these cell phones. I can show you. There's three guys that I can show you. One in Durban, one in Kokstad, and one in Bloemfontein. We're actually now working with TIA to try and see if they can fund one of the guys. But these are innovations and things that are there. In terms of our members being blocked from access, I can take you to a guy that is running Sci-Fi Net. He's the oldest, and he's been running his own network the longest. His name is Larry. He's in Bloemfontein, and he's been fighting for access to government infrastructure, one of the buildings, the high buildings. And in there blocking him is Vodacom and MTN and them, because they're already there. And they give ridiculous excuses, and we had to fight for him to get that access. Over and above being a president, I'm part of the SA Connect project. The company is called Mzansi Connect, where we got 34 SMMEs that responded to the tender and formed one consortium and is rolling out SA Connect as we speak. We were supposed to have a high site in Eastwood, and that tower belongs to the American Tower Company. Up until today, we don't have that access. We're supposed to have DFA and Liquid backhauling for us. They never did that. We had to go and make loans of huge amounts of money to buy infrastructure so that we find another way around. If it wasn't for Centec, we would have never been able to roll out SA Connect, and that was the whole intention, just because we were competing on that district, and we beat them at the tender. So these things are there, and they're real, and they're happening, and they're absolutely frustrating. Now, the use of the free spectrum, Honorable McKenzie, yes, it works. We use that. Here's the problem. They also use that spectrum. If they are using stronger devices and you are pointing to the same tower, they will bash you left, right, and center. You're not even going to get 1 meg of connectivity. That is what happens over and above. And they know this. And this is where we start to compete. So which means that you have to spend a lot of time going into your devices and keep configuring it until you find the right range in that spectrum where you can get the maximum capacity. I'm talking from experience of things that are actually happening as we're looking at. In terms of the MTN and those figures, I'm saying that those figures need to be vetted, because I'm talking as a personal experience, as a user now, an MTN user. I go on the SA Connect project to a rural area, 20 kilometers away. I don't have connectivity in some of the areas. You come to the people and you're like, what's happening with the connectivity? Or you're installing a device, they say, is this going to boost my signal? Hey, you know, this MTN doesn't work. Or in other areas, this Vodacom doesn't work. And then you say to yourself, if they claim that they've got that 92% or 50 million people connected, then why do they need spectrum if already the people are connected? So these things start to be confusing. And what I'm saying is that those figures, we all know that they've never been vetted. There's no one that has went out, unless there's someone that can say, like CSIR or something, that can say this is where the coverage is. So when it suits us, we make it typical advertising, right? So those are the things that we're looking at. When it comes to the ownership of the WAN, this is how we see it. All you need to be able to build a community network for your people. Now, I've got 2,000 people a month. Here are the houses. I can see them. There's a mountain, Lapane Kovintsimbi, just above from the dam. There's a mountain there. If I stand on that mountain, I can see these 2,000 houses, right? But there's no tower there. So you need the WAN to put the tower there in that mountain. Now, on that mountain, I can see the 2,000 houses on this side. I can see the 4,000 houses on the other side. Right? I don't have the money to build that tower, because if I'm building that tower, you're going to be spending 2 million rand or something. Right? Then it needs backhaul to Freyhead, to the BBI pop. Let the one put that backhaul to BBI, it's done. And at BBI, you do your cross connects and everything, I already have access to the internet. Right? Now, all I have to do, I have to go to a school that is nearby. I go to Myro. I buy a 15,000 rand tower because there's no double stories and no trees there in my area. I buy a 15,000 rand tower. Those equipments, Honorable Kenzie, the ones with that free spectrum, because now it's shorter range. I buy that equipment, and that equipment is going to charge, is going to cost me for 360 degree, 24,000 rand. Right? I can already cover those houses around that area. Then I go and buy SMs that are 800 rand per house. I connect them and link them to my tower. I buy a switch for 12,000 rand. Right? An edge core switch. I'm sorted. All I need to do now is go to an ISP and buy bandwidth, internet bandwidth. And I've already built a network, and it's a community network. But I need to have a class license, a network and a services license for that area. Now, if I want to compete with Telkom and with your MTNs and your Vodacoms, I'm not going to go and start creating cell phones and compete with them at that space. It's too expensive for the people. I'm going to use VoIP because I want people to pay 20 cents or for, charge them 30 cents per call, per minute. So I'm going to use VoIP. I need an individual license so that I can get issued numbers. There you have it. I've just built a network, and I'm going to sell 5 rand a day uncapped for that. Because with BBI for 100 meg backhaul, you're spending about 2,400, 3,000, and then you're paying 100 meg per line. But they can get it even cheaper because they buy direct from UK. So these things are possible and they're there. All you need is you need to have a WAN, and that WAN needs to focus on the infrastructure. Now, you've got Broadband Infracom, you've got Centec, you've got Telkom. Those are the people that should be working with the WAN to build that infrastructure and to do those links and those interconnections. Then the only thing that you are having now is an ISP problem, DG. But DG, you have a program, the ZDNA program, that allows me to have SMMEs, the youth now, that are internet service providers. You've trained them. You've trained up to date more than 500 of them. They can be internet service providers. But the biggest problem that you're having is the IP address that you must buy from Mauritius. Right? Now, government needs to then come in and assist with that in terms of buying those IP addresses. We're moving from class from IP version 4 to IP version 6 right now, right? And then you have that. Now, our SMMEs, we are engineers. We know how to do those things. We know how to configure those things. Now, this is why the WAN is so scary for them. And that's how we need the WAN to operate. We have got people, honorable member, that are going to be customers of the WAN, right? Because they're going to provide the layer 3 service. The WAN provides layer 2, backhauling back to the internet. Now, over and above that, we've got these networks. Now you've got these little kids that go and take video shoots of weddings and all of those things. They are now our customers providing those services. Right now, we've got a training company. It's not an IT company. They are training students, people, how to fix cell phones and laptops, right? Now, they can provide that training. Now, you go to your MTNs and Vodacoms, and guess what happens? You've already got, in the location, people with an ISO 9000 certificate to fix cell phones. Now, your Vodacoms and MTNs, if they are true into what they're saying, they develop SMMEs, they must take their cell phones to those people. And they will tell you that in the country, they've only got two people that fix cell phones, their cell phones. And this is why it takes so long for you, have to wait days for you to sort out your cell phone. So there's a lot of things that the WAN can actually unlock. And we have sat down and we have unpacked it to that level. Now, coming to the question where do we want to play in the WAN? It is at all of those levels. We have people that are interested in the carrier-grade infrastructure backhauling. And those people should be able to provide a service or to subcontract to the WAN in terms of building that network and that infrastructure. The ownership of the WAN, the way that it's proposed, is absolutely perfect on the model. Where you're having people that run this network, they set the regulation, do the planning, do the financial, this and that and that. But they need to partner, and it will not work if you're not with BBI, if you're not working with Telkom, because those are the people that have the backhaul infrastructure, and they have all the capabilities that you need. Everything else on this side is easy. It's easy as daylight. And this is the thing now where SA Connect has come in. Of the 34 SMMEs, some of them are graphic designers, some of them were desktop technicians, and they were sitting and they didn't have work because government is not giving them work. But today, they can plan and build a network for you, and they can own a network in a ward. Now, if a ward has 1,000 people, and you have 600 of those people, and they're paying you 150 rand a month, you can live as an SMME, and you can maintain that network. And there's all those other legacy services, those projects, and those programs that we've said. So these are the kind of things that we're looking at and how we see the one working. But it's a beautiful concept. And we can sit outside of this meeting, and we're sitting with engineers, and we can sit down and plan, and we can make something that will work even in less than 6 months, because it is already something that is working there. The only thing that it just needs that middle thing, where you connect from my network at that community and going back. How I fund in that community, it's easy. I go to the community, those 2,000 houses, and I say, let us build this tower. Invest 1,000 rand into this tower. From whatever revenue that I make, you're going to get a percentage of it. And you invest, that's it. It's a community network. Now you try and take down that network, and you'll see how that community will be. Right? And that is all how it needs to work. Thank you very much.
An interesting angle. Thank you, Mr. Rawls and Babu Africa. I think you've made your point. Earlier on, during some break, I was approached by Umaka Agaseseko Hambile Mach, because he was here on Tuesday, he was here today, and he was saying to me, can you kindly just invite 20 of these SMMEs and listen to them? I guess if we get a few of them DG, let them not be represented by organizations. If, for instance, Africa were to come and speak for himself and lead the youth fora and call Ubaba Rawls, say, Rawls, please don't speak for your professional PBF organization in Yamaledos. Just speak for yourself. We will actually get the heartbeat of what our people are yearning for, and therefore inspire us to see whether we are able to respond to their outcry. Actually, when I listened to Africa, he reminded me of me. You know, I had the big hairstyle. And if I can leave my beard, you'll see that I'll overtake him. But, you know, at age, I started working at age 18. That's when I finished my matric. I was a bit advanced, yeah. Now, at age 30, I was very rich. Got married at age 22. Child abuse, ne? No, my wife is younger than me. But at age 30, I was very rich. But as you know the system of the time, I had to spend quality time behind bars. And I lost what had accumulated. And I lost out on my youthful dream because of the system that was here. That's how I joined politics. Actually, I still feel I don't belong here. That's why I don't want to come back. We have a young man behind us. I am going to request him to occupy this seat. His name is Rian. Now, Rian is an economist. He is one of those people that I granted, out of our timeline, the opportunity to come and present. Because I think we need all these arguments. And I want everyone who appears before this committee to feel free to exercise the rights as enshrined in the Constitution, Chapter 2. freedom of speech. Rian, don't be intimidated by the previous speakers, ne? Because there's always Africa. Africa. Africa, there is a free tender here. So Rian is going to present he's one of the people that I spoke about that they requested outside our timeline. But we needed to listen because we would like to hear all these views. And I'm glad that the councillors from ICASA are still here. Because indeed, the issues are being raised here. They are speaking to you, your mandate, and the extent to which you live up to it as a department, whether they have intervened in the manner that helps everyone, and all of ourselves and industry, because we will definitely have to then sit down and say, how do we deal with this animal in front of us? Rian, you're on the floor. I know that I gave you limited time, but yeah, so. Rian, I don't know. But you've printed some beautiful documents, but yeah, present it from that thing. You are one of those people that went to Mpumalanga to go and cut some of our quality trees. This paper is very expensive that he has used here, courtesy of Mpumalanga plantations. I think, who was doing this work. So now, are you winning?
I'm winning. I'll be there in 1 second. Sorry about that.
Don't go through everything that you have raised, because you see your data is quite extensive. You must also understand we have not had an opportunity to read through everything that you had. And that's the price to pay for arriving late. Those that came on time were able to go through their documents thoroughly when we accommodated you. So if we don't give you sufficient, if we were unable to allow you to go, it's because we had to accommodate you.
Thank you so much, and thank you very much for the opportunity to present here today. As the Chair explained, I'm an economist at Acacia Economics, and we consult extensively in this area. And what we're presenting is my views, not those of Acacia Economics. So a lot of us used to work at the Competition Commission, and so certainly my interest in all of this is as an economist and as a competition practitioner in the area. And so that's the perspective that I am coming from. So what I would like to explain today is how I think that the ECA Amendment Bill is going to result in higher costs to communicate in South Africa. I think that firstly, what we've seen in South Africa over the last 20 years is a lot of infrastructure competition that's had some enormous benefits. So here on this particular graph, you can see MTN and Vodacom chasing each other across the years to roll out new infrastructure. And the fundamental premise in the ECA Amendment Bill is that this kind of duplication of infrastructure is bad. It's high cost. It's resulted in bad things. But in fact, what it's resulted in, what competition in general results in, is great outcomes for consumers. So this is exactly what we would want to see. This kind of graph in a market, we'd want to see MTN and Vodacom fighting each other out in the marketplace to bring about greater coverage. And so, but what the ECA Amendment Bill, but it fundamentally, its main premise is that this duplication of infrastructure lies at the heart of all of our problems. And I'd like to persuade you that the opposite is true. It's competition that has benefited all of us to a significant degree. So, and all of where that infrastructure competition has led us to is enormously high levels of coverage. So South Africa's level of coverage is all the way out here at close to 100%. Yes, we can fight about certain parts of the country, of course, and certain towns and not spots, they're called, where people don't have coverage. That is certainly possible. But South Africa has the highest coverage in Africa, bar none, other than Egypt, in fact. And I would say that by reducing that infrastructure competition, that those levels of coverage aren't going to be improved. In fact, they will likely be reduced. But having said all of that, so this is great. So we've had MTN and Vodacom fighting each other across the years. We've had Cell C, Telkom Mobile coming in and competing with their own infrastructure over the years. But we sit with a massive problem, a huge problem, and that is uptake of the internet. And so this is from Statistics South Africa. This is from the General Household Survey. They put this out every single year. Fantastic data. And what they show is that, sure, you know, South Africa, you know, we're starting to hit the 50-60% of households that have at least one person that can connect to the internet. However, when those exact same people go out, the Statistics South Africa employees go out, and they ask households, so, do you have internet? Do you have an internet connection at home? Does this household, are the people in this household able to connect to internet at home? Only 10% of households report that they can connect at home, and remember that's across South Africa. And in rural provinces like Limpopo, that falls to 1.3%. That should shock everybody here. That's an appalling number. So 1.3% of households in Limpopo can or connect to the internet, have an internet connection at home. And so there's a major problem. But the problem is not coverage. The problem is not coverage. Remember, we've got the highest coverage in Africa, or except Egypt. The problem is price, certainly, is almost certainly a problem. So people do report in surveys that indeed they don't take up internet connections because handsets are expensive, services are expensive, but there are other reasons as well, and that also appears in the General Household Survey, by the way. There are other reasons, such as a lack of awareness of what the purpose of all of these services can do. There's a lack of digital skills and literacy. So there are other areas to be worked on as well. The one thing I will say about the ECA Amendment Bill is that it's almost silent on fixed lines, other than to have a single trenching in adequately served rules. Now, this is surprising because fixed lines, according to Cisco, so Cisco is this company, they build the routers that the internet runs on, and so people rely on their forecasts of what they think the internet's going to do, and they have predictions about how much data is going to be carried over fixed versus mobile. And an enormous proportion of the data in South Africa is going to be carried across fixed lines. The ECA Amendment Bill deals almost entirely from a universal service perspective, from an uptake perspective, with mobile, with the WOAN. That's the solution. But the usage is way over here at fixed. So there's a massive gap in respect of what the ECA Amendment Bill is trying to do and what in fact how in fact the internet is being used in South Africa.
Thank you, sir. When you talk about fixed lines, you're also talking about FTTX?
Yes.
Okay, thank you.
Yeah. Yeah. So when I'm talking about fixed lines, I'm talking about fiber, copper connections, dedicated connections to end users such as households or businesses. Okay. Now, but what the ECA Amendment Bill does do is that it will slow down the green shoots of competition that we're starting to see in the fixed line space, at least, by requiring only single trenching and by saying that structures or residences that already have a fixed line connection, say, are adequately served, and therefore no one else may trench there. So I think that so the two previous speakers were all trying to say how they're trying to get into the sector. Having a single trenching rule and an adequately served rule will shut them out completely from fixed lines. That is for sure.
And I think it's fundamentally anti-competitive, and it's something that's so manifestly bad for consumers that I can't understand why it's in there. I know where it comes from. It's because people see trenching down the roads and they get upset about this. But think about the thousands and thousands of jobs that are created when roads are dug up. That is exactly what happens. They are very often trenched manually. And South Africa's got a 40% unemployment rate. It is by far our biggest problem, and you are going to slow down the creation of jobs through this rule, through both of those rules. Now, in South Africa, we've been talking a lot during the course of the day about how there are four mobile operators. That's not strictly speaking correct. So there are at least two more that have LTE capable spectrum, and that is Liquid Telecom and Rain. And so, in fact, what we have is six wireless network operators that have a substantive national type network. Now, South Africa is already, with these six licensees, outside of very quite far outside of the range of what the experience is in other countries. So this here isn't my slide. This is a slide by Analysis Mason and Datacon to analyst firms. And they had a look at all the spectrum auctions of the last few years in a whole number of countries. And they found that, frankly, the bulk of the spectrum gets assigned to three operators and in some rare cases, four operators. And frankly, the bulk of that spectrum really goes to two operators. So as it is, we've got six in South Africa, so we're already way more than the maximum of four in many, many other countries. And now what one interpretation of the WERN is that we're going to get a seventh infrastructure-based player. If that is the correct interpretation, in other words, that there's going to be a seventh infrastructure-based player building out network, I would say that A runs counter to the premise of the ECA amendment bill, which is to remove the duplication of infrastructure. But secondly, it would be far outside of the norm internationally, certainly. If in fact, so now I'm going to take you to just some pure economics. So I will go through this quickly. I promise you, I this isn't an economics lesson. So what I would like to explain is how you can go from a situation where you're concerned about this duopoly potentially. So you're concerned about market power. So as economists, we call firms that are able to charge prices significantly above costs, we call that a firm that has market power. And how we analyze these firms is by means of examining prices and quantities. And so as price goes up, so quantity goes down. And that's why we have this demand curve that slopes downwards like this. Okay. And so we try and figure out, well, firms with market power, how do they set prices? How do they go about setting prices? Well, they set prices where the incremental revenues that they earn are equal to the marginal costs of providing those services. So this is the marginal revenue curve of Monopolist, and I can show you afterwards about how that works. But just for now, where Monopolist set prices is over here. So firm with market power, this is what we're concerned about, right? This whole intervention is all about nasty MTN and Vodacom, and they've got market power, and we're trying to deal with it. That's where this ECA amendment bill is coming from, to some extent at least, right? And so these firms with market power charge a price well above cost over here, and they make a very great big profit that's equal to this green area. Now, what happens when in order to remedy this, what we're going to try and do is we're going to try and separate out some of this market power. We're going to try and introduce this WERN concept, right, which is going to own spectrum independently. And this spectrum is going to be rented back effectively by MTN and Vodacom and Cell C and Telkom Mobile, right? That's otherwise the WERN's not commercially viable. It won't fly at all. So all that's happening is that you're introducing another layer in the value chain in South Africa in telecommunications. You're going to introduce a company that's going to require a margin and a markup over the spectrum that you've provided it. And so what happens in those circumstances from an economics perspective is that you have an effect called double marginalization. But that you can just ignore the economics of all of this. The concept is very simple. You've now got two firms in the value chain instead of one, and what you're doing is you're making a bad situation, these firms that have market power, worse. So you're going to drive up the cost to communicate, not produce them, through this WOAN intervention. Okay. Now, that's not to say that allocating and assigning spectrum and generating more competition through spectrum assignments is not possible. Of course, it's possible. So what really needs to happen in South Africa is for these huge amounts of spectrum, and there really is a lot that other countries have identified for broadband in a whole range of areas, that the whole focus of the Act, of the Amendments Act, should be to prioritize the allocation of spectrum for broadband and getting as much of the spectrum out there into the marketplace as possible. The way to do that and so the big concern here is, well, yes, that's all very well. We know we need to get spectrum into the market, but how do we do it while we've got these nasty oligopoly-type players and we're just going to give them more of the same thing? And there are a range of tools that can be used and that are used, typically, because South Africa is not unique, to mitigate the effects of that market power. So you can have a set-aside, for example, for a new entrant, which ICASA, by the way, can do right now. So you don't need to have a new piece of legislation for ICASA to say, look, we're going to set aside a chunk of spectrum for a new entrant. Yes, it's the seventh wireless operator. No, some guy went to Parliament and said that that's probably not going to work. But, you know, we're going to do it anyway because we're trying to introduce, we're trying to have more inclusivity and we're trying to do different things. You can do all of that. You don't need an ECA amendment bill to have a set-aside for spectrum. And other countries have had set-asides for new entrants. And in order to prevent these monopolies, so the big concern with market-based spectrum allocation mechanisms is that only the big guys with lots of money are going to be able to buy up all the spectrum, and so we're just going to perpetuate this nasty situation that you have. Well, you can have spectrum caps to prevent exactly that. Two very laudable interventions in the ECA Amendment Bill are spectrum sharing and trading. That will allow spectrum to find its way into operator networks that most value the spectrum, again, while preserving competition through competition rules. Okay, then I'd like to deal with a couple of fallacies about WOANs in other countries. So, maybe the MTN guy this afternoon had actually been to Rwanda, but a lot of people like to talk about the WOAN in Rwanda, but they've never actually been there. I mean, we did some work for the World Bank at doing some training for the Rwanda Utilities Regulatory Authority, among other telecoms regulators in the region, and we chatted to them about what was actually going on with their WOAN. The first point to make is that in Rwanda, there's a quasi-monopoly, MTN. MTN is a lot bigger in Rwanda than Vodacom or MTN are in South Africa. It really is very big, and so they were introducing effectively a second network there. Yes, there's Airtel in Rwanda, and there may be one other licensee, but they really are very small. They were dealing with a totally different issue in Rwanda. Secondly, when you actually have a look at the statistics on what's happened to internet penetration, if I added in 2017, then I'm sorry that I didn't do it, you would see an uptick in internet penetration. But it's had nothing like, so the WOAN in Rwanda was introduced at the end of 2014, and internet penetration was kind of flat. Yes, as I say, it's increased now. But internet penetration was growing dramatically before the WOAN came about. I would say that the WOAN may not have resulted in much significantly more internet penetration at all. Then finally, regarding the WOAN in Rwanda, and part of the idea is that you have all these services-based competitors, and they all And they're all making making use of this wholesale open access network. In Rwanda, that's simply not what's transpired. So what you have is shops and retailers effectively selling airtime, from what we can understand, on that open access network, rather than this vibrant telecommunications sector developing. So I would say that I mean, while a more thorough analysis would be needed to see how it's all really transpired, it seems from the fact that in fact the WON has not achieved what it was supposed to in Rwanda. Then in the other example that is often brought up is Mexico, and there's an excellent interview, in fact, and I would encourage you all to listen to it, on Tech Central, with the government official responsible for implementing the WON in Mexico. And I was astounded, because the WON in Mexico couldn't be more different than to the WON proposed in South Africa. Again, similar to Rwanda, Mexico is dealing with a quasi-monopoly situation. So not the case in nothing like the case in South Africa, where we do have at least two very strong competitors, and then a third competitor, Cell C, which is certainly growing a lot, and Telkom Mobile, which just reported really great results. So it's really, in Mexico, they were dealing with a quasi-monopoly. The first thing I would say is that they did exactly what I spoke about a minute ago. They had a spectrum set aside, and they had competitive bidding for that spectrum set aside. Now, think about the difference. In South Africa, we're really worried. Here, we're all sitting here concerned that MTN and Vodacom are these really big firms that have market power. And in this WON idea, what we're asking them to do is get together with Telkom Mobile and Cell C in a room and chat about how we can make the industry better. I mean, from a competition practitioner's perspective, this makes your hair stand on end. You've just said that you've got a really concentrated market. Now you want them to all get around in a room and chat about how they can fix all this up through a WON. It's horrifying from a competition perspective, and it is not at all what happened in Mexico. In Mexico, they had competitive bidding for a spectrum set-aside, which makes perfect sense. Secondly, they had commercial off-take agreements in the WON in Mexico. In South Africa, what we're proposing is that the incumbents must buy. So you're forcing them into this nice, cozy relationship with the WON. And then finally, the WON in Mexico was an infrastructure rival. It's being set up as an infrastructure rival. It has as its fundamental premise that infrastructure competition is a good thing. Of course, the WON in South Africa is being set up on the premise that this is a duplication of infrastructure and so on. Okay, rather than, so where does all of this go? Rather than a WON, what we need to do is implement the existing open access framework that already exists in the electronic communications network. What the ECA Amendment Bill is proposing to do is, instead of having this nice targeted system where you target the guys that you're worried about, maybe, say you eventually figure out after a long process that MTN and Vodacom have market power, you deal with that and you regulate and you provide open access to those networks, to the networks that have market power. Instead, what the ECA Amendment Bill is doing is extending extremely onerous compliance obligations. We're talking about accounting separation, cost-based pricing on all deemed entities. Now, deemed entities are very widely framed. So it's anybody that's got 25% more or more of total infrastructure. Where, like in my area, in respect of fixed line infrastructure, you'd be forcing open a very, very small network by South African standards. So you're massively raising compliance costs for hundreds of licensees, including the new entrants that are trying to get into the market, and that will raise the cost to communicate. It raises barriers to entry. It means far fewer entrants, and it's a major problem. As opposed to having a targeted intervention. Dealing with firms that have market power, which is, from an economics perspective, what all of this should be about. Now, this is a very important slide, and I'm sorry, it's a little, you've got the, hopefully some of you have it in front of you, but the WON intervention in South Africa is really just one possible intervention among a whole host of different kinds of interventions. So, for example, if there is a village in a rural area that needs additional connectivity, or a school, or clinic, or hospitals, or all of the above, you could have a reverse auction in that area. You could have a reverse auction such that the lowest cost bidder provides services to that area. You could introduce bottom-up projects of exactly the kind we just heard about. So have very small entrepreneurs service those communities paid for through universal service funds. You could use institutional demand stimulation, so you could aggregate all of the demand from schools and hospitals and clinics in an area and get fixed lines out to those areas so that competitive networks are rolled out. You could have license obligations. You could have end-user subsidies. You could have a designated universal service operator. But note, and that's this WON kind of idea, right? But note, that's one of about 10 interventions that are typically employed in many, many other countries, developing to deal with exactly the kinds of problems that we face. By the way, I don't think we're very special. I would also say that this kind of wholesale takeover of universal service by the policymaker, by the minister in this case, it runs totally counter to international best practice. International best practice, I mean, and this is according to the International Telecommunications Union, requires an independent agency that decides how best, which among the previous slides, dozen or so different options could be used to get services out to very poor communities. All right. So, just in conclusion, I just want to sort of summarize by saying that I think this ECA amendment bill will raise the cost to communicate. I don't think it will lower the cost to communicate. I think that there's certain great things in there, such as spectrum sharing and trading. I think that there's key reforms to universal service regulation that would make universal service more independent are missed. And I think that the WON, by introducing an additional intermediary in the value chain, I think that will raise the cost to communicate because of the double marginalization problem. Then I think that there's some missed opportunities here that would really lower the barriers to entry for new entrants of the kind that we just spoke about. So we just heard at length how it's impossible to get a license in South Africa because there's this onerous invitation to apply process which becomes political and goes through the minister. In many, many other countries, there's a simple notification process. You write a letter or send an email to the regulator and say, hi, I'm setting up my telecoms network now, and off I'm going. I've still got to comply with various rules as a communications provider, but there's a simple notification process. And really, I think that South Africa's legislation through this invitation to apply for a simple license is extremely old-fashioned, and I think that the ECA Amendment Bill would really do well, could really lower the barriers to entry, particularly for new entrants that we've just been speaking about, through a very simple reform. Okay, and finally, I would say that the amendment bill is talking about less competition, not more competition. It's talking about raising the barriers to entry through single trenching, through already served rules, rather than lowering barriers to entry. I think it's going to lead to more exclusion, not less exclusion, and I think it's going to lead to much higher cost to communicate. We're talking a lot about cost to communicate, but there's also a big impact on jobs. If you permitted all of these new entrants that we were just speaking about to enter the market, to trench, to build networks, this would create an enormously labor-intensive activity, and I think it would create a lot of jobs, and I think there's a huge opportunity being missed in taking that into account. Very lastly, you need to preserve regulatory independence. And what the ECA Amendment Bill is doing is undermining it. It's taking spectrum allocation and its management away from the regulator and giving it to the minister. It's taking universal service away from independent agencies, giving them to the minister. I think that runs totally counter to international best practice, where the regulation of the sector ought to be independent of the political process. Thank you, Chair.
Rian, thank you. Colleagues? Madam Shin? Any other taker? Put Madam Shin on the floor.
Thank you, Chairperson. There's been a lot of talk about the functional separation of the big ugly telcos to actually, you know, make it more, make them more competitive and have easier access and stuff. Has that functional separation been done anywhere else? If so, how feasible is it? How effective is it in making making the market more competitive? And is it financially sustainable? Also, is it a technical issue or is it just a bookkeeping issue to separate? Thank you.
Good. Department, DG?
Yeah.
Madam, so just hold on. I mean, keep the files going. I just want to...
Yeah. Chair, it's late in the day, at night. But it's quite tempting, obviously, to respond, maybe not to respond, but just to make our own comments on the issues that are coming up. Now, starting with the issue around spectrum management, there are three concepts that are used to explain spectrum management in telecommunications policy. So one would be allotment, and then there is allocation and assignment stroke licensing. Now, what has been difficult in this discussion is how those are understood and explained, because everything has just been bundled to say you are taking in the regulator's powers. Now, we have been consistent since Monday to say that our understanding is that the allotment of frequency is done by the International Telecommunications Union at the international level, and that allocation is the function of a minister in a, of a national administration, and assignment of licenses is the responsibility of the regulator. Now, in terms of spectrum, if you look at Section 34 of the current law, it says that ICASA develops the radio frequency plan and the minister approves. And that has proven to be a problem at times as to what is the intention of saying that you must develop and you must approve. And what happens if the approver is not like agreeing with what that which you must approve? Because what is the intention? Why do you want someone? Why can't you give powers altogether to the one who develops that document and say, you develop this document, is it done? What is the value of saying that someone else must approve that which another person has developed? So surely there is a mischief that needs to be understood in terms of the disaggregation of the powers of the two people. Now, the comparison with Rwanda and others, I always find it very problematic, because as it was stated in one presentation, the Rwandan model, Rwanda is a state-run model. So the state plans this thing with the KT and whoever else is involved. Now, the one in South Africa, perhaps, you know, in South Africa, we can even do without calling it a one, by the way. Because I can tell you that much of the difficulty that we experience in this discussion is the name one, which means different things to different people. I will easily say all what we're doing here is a new IECNS license, a license that may be a consortium of different parties that voluntarily agree to form that consortium. So perhaps for a moment, let's not talk about a word, because and talk about the substance of what we're trying to do. As a simple IECNS as permitted by law to can provide a particular service. Exactly what you're saying, that why can't you just license and you know, as you can do. And that's what we're doing. Now, Chair, very quickly is on the market structure side is what do we see out there in the horizon. Can we safely say that where we are is the end of it all? So having the six operators that you refer to, we say, for example, this is all we can have in South Africa. Let's just live with it. But the reality on the ground suggests otherwise, that that which you have will never be all you can have. Because where we sit as government, you always have the WISPs and the internet service providers saying that we want better access to capacity, because what we're getting now is really taking us out of business. We can't operate because in a majority of instances, they are buying from companies that they are competing with downstream. So if you see that vertical integrated companies are the best model to enable those who want to start, our view is has been different in that it has not worked in reality. And the MVNOs that are being funded are generally very big and affluent companies. Because it's easy to talk about Standard Bank. We all know that if Standard Bank comes and say, Mr. Matlango, we want to use your bedroom, part of one of your rooms in the house, well, it's a good thing it's Standard Bank. Maybe they will even assist finance the house. But so... so when we listen every time everyone saying that no, there are MVNOs and everything, the examples that are being given of MVNOs are also very interesting. Standard Bank, FNB, very big companies. That's what everyone's talking about when it comes to MVNO. We don't think that you can create the companies at the scale of the six companies that are mentioned in South Africa. But from the presentation of ISPA and WAPA, amongst others, what we saw is that there's a tier of companies that can exist in the market, which are not necessarily, you don't have to be big to exist necessarily. So there are small companies that, in our view, can participate in the market and constitute a second tier, and we believe that going forward to the digital economy and the fourth industrial revolution, in fact, you don't need those kind of smaller young companies. That will be providing this machine-to-machine services and a whole lot of things that will define the digital economy. So our position is informed by the kind of market structure that we will see emerging over a period of time. Now, on the fixed infrastructure policy that is proposing, the one discernible problem is the constraints that are imposed by, in particular, local government. That is where we see the problem. Because if you look at all these networks, Vumatel, our own broadband Infraco, Fiberco, and others, they operate open access networks. So it is already happening in that space, so that there is no need for us to even do anything about it. All what we are doing is to enable that by saying that local government make concessions for us to do that. Now, if you were to sit in a transport policy meeting and have this discussion that let's allow digging and digging them. So from a costing point of view, if you are sitting here, you can safely say we need to be allowed to dig as and when we want. But when you sit in another meeting where people discuss transport policy, budget and everything, you will be surprised that their concerns are different to what we're having here, and that the digging and digging present other constraints that may be unknown to ourselves, because maybe we are not into that in that space. So having worked in that space myself in other infrastructure sectors, I know that the discussion that other side is saying quite a lot about us, that we're creating problems and increasing costs on the other side. You know, so other sectors have different views. So we need to be mindful of that when we also engage. Very lastly, Chair, I think the Competition Commission recently undertook a massive inquiry that all of us were part of on the data prices and all those kind of things. And they went very deeper to market structures and the likes. And hopefully, this report of the Competition Commission will come before we conclude this process. because it will then add a lot of value in the discussion that we are having. But from a pricing point of view, when you look at data bundles, those of us who buy data bundles, there is always this thing that there is big competition going on between MTN and Vodacom. But you'll see most of the time that they charge not far from each other in terms of prices. Even in instances where the smaller operators have attempted to lower the bar, you know, very small operators of 3%, the other one is 12%, have attempted to lower prices. There's been no reaction from the big two companies. So overall, I would welcome this kind of thinking, but then say that it may not be entirely correct. I mean, it's a very exciting read, but it's worth considering. Alf Chair will just deal with two issues so that we complete our work, can be paid at the end of the month.
Thank you, Chief, I can earn my salary then. So, well, the presentation correctly only showed two operators on the graph that compete on infrastructure, but what about other operators that can't compete? So the one will promote infrastructure competition with incumbents at the wholesale level, especially as soon as it can reach scale. So MNOs will then start opening their networks, in our view, voluntarily to compete for the one customers. But then it also enables service-based competition on its network. That is the next, even more important level of competition. Chair, clarity on the single trenching. So single trenching apply, and the bill says where technically feasible to do so. So it wouldn't apply everywhere. It's selective in a sense. But there are important objectives around that. The infrastructure duplication, as pointed out, is the primary one. But why is that an issue? Environmental protection concerns. There would be less way leave applications, and these are just things I quickly dotted down. I think you've probably looked at there's a lot of additional justification. Lower capex and trenching is one of the most expensive parts of network build, less disruption to municipal services. Municipalities also support single trenching due to a number of reasons, though they said earlier this week that they have jurisdiction in municipal areas and it can't be CASA determining the rules on single trenching. So we'll have to go back on that issue and determine whether we exclude municipal areas perhaps, which means the claim problem is even less because it'll be outside municipal areas that we're talking about the single trenching. But in any event, there may be many exceptions to the rule, but in our view, the policy remains sensible. On the competition concerns and so on, we have consulted with competition authorities, Chair, so we can't do more than that. If they are generally happy and they're not here to object to the bill as they've done in some previous years that I was here on amendments, then I want to believe that they are happy with what is being suggested here. The implementation of the existing ECA sounds simple, just implement the current framework on facilities leasing. The current framework is insufficient and it has proven unsuccessful. Local loop unbundling is but one example in this regard. It has not achieved its objective since 2006. It cannot continue. There are too many mechanisms like the economic feasibility test that's abused by incumbents to block access. Though there has been progress in fixed, there's little opening that has taken place at mobile level. ISPA's presentation attested to this. It's done selectively depending on whether it suits an access provider. Lastly, on the last slide, there was a recommendation that ICASA must raise funds from the operators, which I assume means retain those funds, but that is a challenge and it's against national policy at this point. Thank you, Chair.
Ladies and gentlemen,
just a comment on my side. I'm not going to comment on the merits of the presentation that was before us today. Just to say that it's a perspective, and I think it's actually a very important perspective that as we engage in February, should get a whole range of views and issues around competition and the competitive effects of the ECA, the proposed changes in the ECA, needs to be examined in detail. So I would propose that in addition to all those other issues that you had raised earlier on, around independence, around spectrum issues and the like, that we also include competition as an area that we need to examine in more detail. Thank you.
Perfect. Indeed, Councillor, that's so true. Competition is one of those issues that needs to be flagged and attended to. I guess this brings us... Well,
I can be very quick.
Very... I give you... Okay.
All right.
You can see my eyes.
Okay, I've got it. I haven't really heard of functional separation being imposed on mobile operators anywhere in the world. Functional separation is actually now part of the rule set for fixed line operators across Europe. So that's very, very common. And Telkom has implemented a degree of this, in fact, in South Africa quite successfully, it seems. Does that answer your question? I would. I would say that the existing remedies under the ECA through a markets inquiry process, where precisely that kind of intervention can be made already, whether it would work in South Africa or not, I'm not sure yet. ECAS is going through a whole process to figure that out.
He's got a website and contact details, and as the council have said, all these ideas, we need to converge them on each and every area that we need to get clarity. I think we are better and rich. We can only be better, not bitter. And I guess with all these inputs, we'll find our way. 9:30 tomorrow, same place. Hopefully go rest a little bit. DG, yeah, it's the first time I spent so much time with the DG, so it has worked. The meeting stands adjourned. No.